Welcome to Asia Pacific Defense Reporter, your go-to source for cutting-edge security insights in the region. Get ready for rapid-fire analysis and commentary from the Asia Pacific with your host, Kim Bergman.
Hello and welcome back. I'm recording this podcast in Seoul, the capital of the Republic of Korea. I was invited here a few days ago by Hyundai Heavy Industries for a ceremony in the shipbuilding town of Ulsan for the contractual delivery of the final KSS-3 Batch 1 submarine. The KSS-3 refers to the third generation of Korean attack submarines. And this is submarine 21 in a series that will be completed at number 27 later this decade or maybe in the early 2030s. The timing of the final batch is a little bit unclear. The second batch are under construction now. Contrast that with the situation in Australia with six Collins class. Both countries, Australia and South Korea, started in the mid-80s on domestic submarine programs. And I've actually posted online about this, so if anyone wants to go into a lot of detail about the history of the Collins program, you're welcome to do that. But it seems pretty clear that one country got their industrial strategy right, and that's South Korea, whereas Australia, we've been chopping and changing, and as regular readers would know, I really have my doubts about the direction that we've embarked on, hoping to acquire nuclear-powered submarines at some distant future point. Now, after the ceremony itself, which was fairly much just some documents being signed, there was a shipyard tour for all of the people who'd been invited along. And that's amazing just for the sheer scale of what is happening here at in Ulsan at Hyundai. Hyundai Heavy Industries is the world's largest shipbuilding company. And you can see why, because their facilities are vast. They've got 11 dry docks, and all of them are filled with massive numbers of, well, mainly commercial vessels, some military stuff. The military section is separated, not surprisingly, and the tour was centered on the submarine that I was referring to, the ROKS Shin Cheho. It's about a 3,300-ton, very modern attack submarine with a number of important features. And for some reason, I and another Australian journalist, at the last moment, we were actually not allowed to board the thing. Apparently, there were some security concerns. And that's a shame, because overall, the Shin Cheho is about the same displacement of Collins, but has a larger diameter hull, and that allows for six vertical launch cells able to fire ballistic missiles. And it also has room for an air-independent propulsion system that gives underwater endurance of more than 20 days. Now, admittedly, that's at a relatively low speed. You can, of course, go much faster, but that comes at the expense of endurance. It's a fairly simple trade-off. In the article that I wrote about this, I said, look, people really have to think about air-independent propulsion submarines in a different way. And I liken them more to its Tesla-style technology. Everyone loves Teslas. Well, this is something similar in the submarine world, very modern, and it only needs to come to the surface in the most extreme cases once every 3 weeks for a short time, recharge its batteries, and silently it continues with its patrol. Anyway, I wish I could have had a poke around inside the thing. Maybe that will happen next time. Oh, I should include a disclaimer at this point. Some journalists don't. I do. I was flown here, and another journalist was flown here by Hyundai. Perfectly normal. This happens in the world of defense journalism a lot. Very modest package, economy flights, reasonable hotel, nothing flash, no fancy dinners, very much a working trip. Anyway, after the submarine, the next stop, and this is a real eye-opener, was the mighty brand new ROKS Jeongjo the Great, the latest 11,000-ton KDX destroyer. This is an Aegis-equipped ship that has the most modern technology that you can find. It's 170 meters in length and has many features that would be familiar to Australians, including, get this, 128 vertical launch missile cells. The majority of those are the Lockheed Martin Mark 41, but then there is some Korean or an indigenous Korean vertical launch system as well. A 5-inch gun, same one that our Navy uses, and the latest MH-60R Seahawk helicopter, again, exactly the same as the one that Australia uses. They have other features such as a powerful towed-array sonar for anti-submarine warfare missions. Put simply, they are larger, faster, and much, much, much more heavily armed than the Hunter class, which, when they're actually built, they'll be around 10,000 tons and 149 meters in length. Let's talk about how long it took to build this huge, modern, powerful warship. The information is truly astonishing. I suggest that all of you sit down to what I'm just about to tell you, and I'm pretty sure that most Australians will simply not believe it. Now, the keel laying for this ship was in October 2021, and the launch was in July 2022. Let me repeat that. Keel laying, October 21, launch, July 2022. So this entire 11,000-ton warship, arguably one of the most modern and powerful warships in the Western world, was constructed in 9 months, from nothing to a fully functioning Aegis destroyer in less than a year. Now, a reminder about the Hunter class. And I'm trying not to be too negative here, because I'm a strong supporter of Australian industry, and people have said to me, you know, just dial it back a little bit when it comes to the Hunters. They will be fine ships when they're delivered, all of that sort of stuff. But anyway, keep in mind that 9-month period for the construction of the KDX destroyer here, and with the Hunter class, contract signature was in 2018, and delivery of the first ship will be 14 years later in 2032, which is quite the comparison, is it not? But to be fair, people are going to say, quite rightly, look, there's more to it than just the keel laying and the launch. There's a design that has to be done. There's a sea trials program that follows the launch. So let's look then at the entire program. The contract with Hyundai Heavy Industries was signed in October 2019, keel laying October 2021, as I said. That's 2 years design and mobilization. The launch 9 months later, and delivery after extensive sea trials will take place in November of this year. And when I say extensive, they really are extensive, because this is the first of class of this series of destroyers. So obviously your first of class of anything gets really, really thoroughly tested. After that, the process will go even faster. And I mean, this is just an absolutely extraordinary achievement. And it explains why Hyundai Heavy Industries is currently the world's largest shipbuilder, and why they are able to perform such amazing feats. Now, in Australia, the Hunter class is still in the design and mobilisation phase, for which prime contractor BAE Systems, I've written about this extensively, have received more than $3 billion out of $6.1 billion for this phase, and an actual production contract for six ships might be signed later this year. People are still being vague about that. I'm not entirely sure why. Now, hypothetically, if Hyundai were to receive a contract late in 2024 for 3 KDX Batch 2 destroyers, they could deliver 3 or 4 of them to Australia before the first Hunter class is launched. And they are the largest and most heavily armed Aegis ships in the world, and they could probably be classed as cruisers rather than destroyers for people who are concerned about such things. But I hear you say, how can we afford such things with the defence budget under so much pressure? Well, that's easy. Stop the gift of $4.7 billion to US submarine construction companies. It's a gift. We don't get anything in return. And then stop exactly the same amount going to the UK for the same lack of deliverables, which is $10 billion of our money being handed over to companies in the US and the UK. We get no benefit from that. That $10 billion would be more than enough for three or four destroyers. But of course, new destroyers aren't part of the master plan, but new general-purpose frigates are. And as it happened, after the KDX destroyer, we were also able to look have a look at the latest generation frigate that is being built for the ROKS, the Cheongnam. It's the first in the class of that name, the Cheongnam class, that will complement the earlier Daegu frigates. And now, here a word of caution, because what I'm about to say next is directly related to the Australian general purpose frigate competition, which is between four bidders. Now, the Department of Defence, backed by the government, in an unprecedented, extraordinary move, has totally banned any of these companies speaking with the media. I think I mentioned that in a previous podcast. This is absolutely ridiculous, and it comes at a time when many members of the Australian community are becoming frustrated with the government's suppression of information that should be in the public domain. The problem is now getting quite an airing. For example, I noticed last week, environmental groups are now being forced to sign NDAs before they get briefings, which makes it impossible for them to go back and discuss proposed legislation with their members. I mean, look, it's totally Orwellian and it's counterproductive. These measures are being put in place by the same people who didn't want you to know about the disgrace of Taipan helicopters being cut up and buried, and the same people who tried to downplay the amount of money being gifted to US industry, pretending for months that it was $3 billion rather than the true $4.7 billion or whatever the exchange rate is today. And on that one, something curious, I really need to get to the bottom of this. I mentioned in a previous podcast that Defence Industry Minister Pat Conroy, in answering a question from me, the transcript's available, he said that release of information is now somehow being monitored or controlled by the security agencies, which I thought was just completely wrong. Now, I actually received a bit of rare feedback from within the department to be told, well, actually, Kim, that's not right. It's not the security agencies who are doing this. You might want to chat with the ministers. They're the ones who are happy to keep people completely in the dark about what's going on. Now, coming back to the frigates, there is just no justification for this ban. Journalists aren't seeking classified performance data or commercial in confidence stuff such as price or the level of AIC. All we want, and the Australian public deserves, is a normal, healthy level of dialogue about what the bidders are offering, why it suits Australia, and that sort of general stuff. And it's not only the public's right to know. I mean, we do still live in a democracy with free speech the last time I checked, but small Australian companies need the media to tell them what's going on, because they sure as hell aren't getting it from the government. Big companies are fine. They've got offices in Canberra. They employ a lot of people, many with a defence or service background, and they can figure out what's going on. But there are a myriad, I don't know, thousands of smaller companies that don't have those resources for them to figure out what's happening. They need industry associations and they need the media to keep them up to date with developments. And even if this level of North Korean paranoia was justified, which it isn't, just put in place a system that requires companies to provide the department, the Navy, with an advanced copy of whatever they plan to release to the media. It's simple. It's effective. they can check it first, make sure that everyone is happy with what's going into the public domain. That, by the way, was a process that was put in place, I believe, completely unnecessarily, but nevertheless, it was put in place for Air 6500 companies. You'd contact a company, the company would agree to pass on some information to you, which had already been vetted. You'd write the article, you'd send a draft back. They would, in turn, run it past defence for the okay. It was a bit cumbersome, but it meant at least that information was getting out in the public domain without generating any problems. And instead, we have a government that wants you to know absolutely nothing about what is going on for a strategically vital multi-billion dollar acquisition. Well, government, I've got news for you, because while you can muzzle Hyundai and all of the others, you cannot muzzle the Republic of Korea Navy. I'd like to see you try and do that, because as it happened at the submarine ceremony, there were plenty of ROKN brass there, as you can imagine, significant event, and they were more than happy to speak on the record with Australian journalists, because they are exceptionally proud of their industry and the fantastic ships that are being produced. That's a bit of a teaser, because I'm not going to go into all of those technical details that our own government is desperate for some bizarre reason to suppress. I'll be happy to share all of that in a future podcast. I just don't have enough time at the moment, but I'll be sharing all of that. And then everyone will be able to see just how harmless this information is that the government doesn't want you to get. Anyway, with an eye on the clock, I'm going to wrap up with some more observations about Korean industry and Australia. Many people would have noticed that another Korean company, Hanwha Ocean, that's part of the Hanwha Group that is already very active in Australia, supplying self-propelled howitzers and infantry fighting vehicles, has put in a bid for Western Australian shipbuilder Austal. To give some context, in the response to the surface ship review, the government listed four bidders for the general purpose frigate, and from Korea, they listed the Daegu-class from Hyundai. Now, that's not lining up with my own observations, for what it's worth, and remembering the companies can't speak with me. Korea has two naval shipyards, Hyundai and Hanwha Ocean, the former DSME, and they are competitors and collaborators. And that's because the government of Korea has a lead yard, follow yard philosophy, and the two companies regularly share the production of all naval platforms. Oh, and by the way, the Hanwha Ocean shipyard at Okpo has almost the same capacity as Hyundai does here in Ulsan, and that explains why Korea is the world's largest shipbuilder. Anyway, based on what I have seen, and remembering that none of this comes from the companies themselves, or they'd be banned from the competition, I suspect there could be two Korean bids, because Hyundai should more logically offer the newer Cheongnam class, which would be an excellent fit for Australia because it has a large fixed face array radar that looks to me broadly similar to the one on ANZACS. The shape of it doesn't matter. It's weight, it's how high it is above the waterline, all of those sorts of things. And that looks about the same. So Hyundai could offer that, and Hanwha Ocean could offer the more mature Daegu class frigate that's been listed in the government's report. And I suspect that someone in Navy or Defence made the incorrect listing of Hyundai offering the Daegu, because the only research they have done is via Wikipedia, and they haven't even bothered to speak with the Koreans, let alone visit the country to actually figure out what is going on up here. And once again, information is probably being totally suppressed because the government and defence don't want their true level of ignorance to be revealed to the general public. Anyway, I've run out of time. As always, thank you very much for listening. See you next time, and goodbye from Seoul.
That's today's Asia Pacific Defence Reporter. For more in-depth articles, expert opinions, and exclusive interviews, visit asiapacificdefencereporter.com. Stay informed, stay ahead. This is your source for all things defence. Until next time.